Hello and welcome to this Mad EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that we are all hoping for. I'm Paul Kirby, and every time I'm joined by about various members of the EV Cafe team. Today, John Curtis. Welcome, JC.
Hello, I'm John Curtis, and I'm Paul's glamorous assistant, Sequins, and yes, I come with a big smile.
You can't say that!
What else do you want me to say?
You're very fresh. Looking today, very John. Fresh. Very fresh. Very clean, shaven, yeah.
That's it. Well, anyway, it's our privilege to be getting to know and understand some of the wonderful pioneers, innovators, and collaborators of our industry. And today, there is no exception. We have the wonderful Lee Sibley. Now, Lee, his claim to fame is he was a national swimmer at the age of 14. He was almost the best at 100 metres, fourth best, which actually is phenomenal. That is amazing. He has his name all over the school walls. No, not in graffiti. He has them on the sports person of the year wall and all of that good stuff. So, you know, Lee, he's an entrepreneur and he's a sportsman. And it just goes on. Lee, welcome.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Paul. I appreciate that. What a warm welcome. But, I'm not so much a sportsman now, Paul, though, to be fair. I think the days are gone.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I think when the work-wise starts taking a toll, really. But
park a bacon butty van outside of your office for an event recently, so that's probably got something to do with it, right?
Yeah, and the copious amount of McDonald's and other fast food chains as well, I suppose.
Other fast food chains
you're
are
not alone, mate. You're not alone.
Well, Lee, listen, it's fantastic that you're here today. And you know, Green 2 Delivery, which is the company that you're co-founder of, is quite an impressive company, really. And just tell us a little bit about what you're doing there. Just give us the Lyft speech for now. We can explore the details as we go along. Yeah.
So me and my co-founder, Jason Atkins, hi, Jay, we got together to help create, initially it was a network of two-person deliveries, some big and bulky items throughout the UK. And when we were creating a network, we realised that we've got to be moving forward and what is holding other companies, our competitors, back. Both in the actual advancement of the sector and the evolution of what we're doing. So we looked at that, the network itself, and we've decided to create a zero emission network, zero emission tailpipe solution throughout the UK. And Green 2 was born basically those two thoughts, mine and Jay's thoughts, and from. And it's grown arms and legs, and we're obviously chatting now with yourself today. So we already was carrying out two-person deliveries throughout the UK anyway. It was a big challenge to create the network and make it available to be able to get the electric vehicles or zero tailpipe vehicles into the solution. And we're still going for it. It's not done. It's not created just yet, but we're a long way down the line. So we're getting there.
But I mean, it's exciting because what you're trying to do hasn't yet been done. So we talk to people that are leading the way in industry so often, and that is absolutely the case for you guys. You're doing something that hasn't yet been done, which is pioneering, right? It's innovation at its best. And what I've loved so far since we first met is the collaboration that you aim for. So you kind of personify our three greatest privileges, which is to talk to pioneers, innovators, and collaborators, and there's a wonderful combination of the three. How did you? What stimulated that sustainability thing? Where did that drive come from?
I think the main thing for the sustainable side of the business and what we're doing is obviously it's not hard to be living your life at the moment and understand the situations throughout the world. On numerous times in a day, you're touched by something that is an issue, and it's down to emissions. It's down to just rubbish on the road. There's plastic here, plastic there. There's emissions here, emissions there. And the more and more that our race increases, the more and more that those emissions and that rubbish like keeps on going up, you know. So there's got to be something to be done, and there's got to be something to be done now. Before we even thought about it, I got myself a nice little Renault Zoe. Other vehicles are available.
I've got one too.
and you know what? I mean, the first day that I got the vehicle, I standard as a kind of a born and bred van driver all the time. I got the vehicle and I tested it. So for the first time I tested it, I said to my wife, I'm taking my son to his football training. I said, we're going. I thought, right, okay, I'm going to test the range. And on the way back, I ran out of charge and literally at the top of the hill. And I had to roll the Zoe down to the bottom of the hill. But that was a challenge to start off with. And I wanted to test the range and the capacity of the vehicle, as everyone does with any new vehicle. And then once you start to get to understand that the charging infrastructure and that actually isn't too bad for a public vehicle, you just have to plan yourself a little bit more. But when you realise you're driving, it's quiet, it's silent, it regens, it does everything. As a driver, when you've driven an electric car and you're a proper driver, you realise, actually, do you know, it's so much easier. It's a bit like going from a manual car to an automatic car. Then you realise, oh, why would I ever have a manual car again, sort of thing, you know? And then you go from a diesel car or a petrol car to an electric car. You're like, why would I ever have them again, you know? So it's that sort of journey. And that's really the kind of thing that really got us into making sure that we were doing the right thing with the transport side and getting as many drivers into electric fleet vehicles. So HGVs, driving the HGVs, electric HGVs is a pleasure for HGV drivers and the vans as well, you know. So that's a real goal of ours, to make sure our employees are enjoying the new technology.
Brilliant.
Lee, when logistics is hugely competitive, and it's a lot of it is around price and certainty. So
yeah,
a company shipping something needs to know that it's going to get there in one piece, but the price of moving it somewhere is key to them winning their business. How do you find the costs of running an EV fleet and the network of vehicles in comparison to traditional logistics? Because most people would just say, stick it on a van, don't care, get it from here to there, all will be well. But you've got a very different ethos.
Yeah, I think the main thing with retailers and the people that we deliver for, obviously, is price, especially this current climate is quite important, because they've got to be competitive online. If they're not competitive online or in the shop, they're not going to sell anything. So, and when they're bringing their prices down, then they have to think about their cost for the deliveries, et cetera, et cetera. So price is very important. And then level of service, so making sure there's no damages, returns, et cetera, et cetera, in our role. We want to be service first, and then we want to be able to have the benefit of having zero emission vehicles delivering a second, basically. But it's I tell you what, the price for us to operate those things, well, it's been a massive journey for us. Like, to the thing to start this off and get this network open and get these vehicles open, they're not the cheapest vehicles in the world. And that is the main telling point in other logistic companies, is the price point between an electric vehicle and that of a diesel vehicle. Yes, you've got all the infrastructure and everything like that, but the legacy fleets and the investment that people have made into their current diesel networks is a lot. To then go and spend even more just to electrify it, obviously, kind of profit-wise, money-wise, everyone's a little bit tight at the moment, does come into play. However, once you've then got the money, which is what we're trying to get to with regards to our raise and all what we're doing, which has been a really tough time over the last year. Once you've done that and you've got the operation, you've got your charging points, you've got your depots, you've got your vehicles, then when you're operating, there is actually a saving to be had. You can, if you're really clever with regards to how you charge when you're charging, and the operation, working out your operation, like even when we have the whole raise done, the whole network open, we're still then going to be learning. It's such a learning curve. All the way through this is a learning curve. When's your vehicles, what's the optimal time for them to come back and charge? When, who can come back charge then? Who can come back charge then? The booking systems of the chargers, the frequency of the chargers, how much you actually then put back into the vehicle for it just to finish its operation for the day. You've got so many different parts there that you can manipulate, so to speak, to be able to make it the most cost-effective way of delivering. But for your information, it's cheaper to run electric vehicles. Once you purchase them, it's cheaper to run electric vehicles than diesel vehicles.
Mm. It's amazingly, I'm sitting here listening, and there's such a joined up approach to this, such like a professional approach, which is obviously the case. You know, you're really building out your business model. You've thought through a lot of this stuff. You mentioned, of course, that it's tough. It's tough when you're having to go to the market. You're no doubt getting some knockbacks. You're no doubt getting some disappointing days, some challenges along the way. But, you know, you seem to be handling it. You seem to be pressing through. Is it, how did you get to be this guy today? Where did that begin? Because obviously you were pretty driven as a kid, but, you know,
yeah,
talk to me about that.
Being an only child, there's like everyone says you're an only child, you're only child syndrome. So that itself is
you do.
Exactly. So ever since a younger kid, you're obviously being an only child, you make your friends, you go out, you make your friends, you really don't, it doesn't matter who you are or what, you understand that at a very early age, you are who you are, and whether people like you, they like you. If they don't, they don't. And you just crack on. From an early age, and then going into the sports and everything as well gave me a competitive edge. Coming away, I always knew from a young age, back in the day at my mum and dad's house, I used to pretend to sell cars on Auto Trader. You know, you get the Auto Trader book, and then you pick the phone up and, oh, I've sold this. You write it down. And I always knew that I wanted to run my own business. So it was just a case of when I left school, what did I do? I actually started as an aircraft engineer back at Stansted Airport back when I first left school, and it's right near where I live. So went to Stansted. It was kind of the obvious place to go and work, you know. And then after that, I actually hurt myself at football, believe it or not. My patella tendon came away from a kneecap during the football. I was off for a while, then created sort of like created a commission scheme for estate agents. My father-in-law had a removals company, so I created a commission scheme for him for estate agents, created the commission scheme, and then we went out and he offered me a job. My father-in-law unfortunately retired, and then some family, and then my brother-in-law's took over, and that don't always work sort of thing. So I went off and I done my own thing. So I run my own removal company there. And then so gradually pushing forward, you learn, you're always adapting, you're always learning. And so we're just getting that through and knowing that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. This year has been extremely hard. I've got a lot. Like, I'm going balder there, I'm going gray, I'm going receding. My weight has ballooned from where I'm not going to the gym as much. Trying to raise, this was our first, mine and Jason's first time of going to raise. So going to do a raise, it was the first time.
What do you mean by going to do a raise? To help the people listening, what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah. So technically, you always kind of see people on LinkedIn, and you'll see them on LinkedIn in their thing, and they'll say, oh, we raised 30 million, we raised 80 million. This tech company raised 120 million, 150 million. And you see it, if they're bloody hell, well done, mate. That's brilliant, that is. Yeah, and you don't pay attention to it. You realise later on down the line, they're all tech companies, mostly. It's very, very easy. No, I wouldn't say easy. You still got to be a quality company and have a good model for you to be able to raise money for. But predominantly in the UK is a lot of tech money's raised. So what you have to do is you have to go out, you have to do your business plans, you have to do your decks, and you go out to investors, VCs, et cetera, to help create your model. In a tech company, you would only have sort of like one or two, maybe even three people at a computer. So your running costs are very minimal. So what they'll use for that tech is to then get more staff to be able to build the development of the actual tech. And then eventually they may have a product to put to market. We're a little bit different. So obviously we already had a business running and an operation running, albeit from a bullet hub operation in the UK and delivering out for UK. And we had to do that process. We're a service delivery. We're a service company. You know, that's what we do. We're not a tech company. We're a service company utilizing the tech that people have invested in. So the being you said about innovators, there's a lot of last mile electric delivery companies, but there's not too many companies that have linked the HGV side to it and then created a full circuit. So having that innovation at the start, there's not too much data for VC companies or investors to go and pull. If we were maybe the second or the third company to have done this, they would have had all the charging data of the fleets. They would have had all the charging, the situation or the third parties and all the retailers' adoption of that service, of that business. They would have had all that information and all that intel. And then when I go to raise or when we go to raise, me and Jay, we would have had a much better opportunity. We've had some successes, which is great, and great partnerships already, but we've also had some lot of lows. We spent nearly 6 months, 7 months of the year going to pitch to tech investors. You know, we didn't really realize that everyone was going, yeah, this is great, but it's not really our sector, or this is great, or it's not really our sector. And I'm like, oh my days. So we've learned so much along the period. But one thing is that you never give up. You know, that's one thing about business. You never give up. You continue until it's done. And that's mine and Jay's spirit. I mean, we've been in our office here at Saffron sometimes at like 11, 12 o'clock at night, not knowing if we're going to be able to get the payment done, you know. And in that period, then all of a sudden you're speaking to investors all over the world at silly clocks at night, and then some money drops in, and then we get all the payments done again, and then it's back to square one, and then we keep rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. It's definitely not for the faint-hearted. It would be a lot easier if we were. This is what I don't like, is that I feel it would be a lot easier if we were a multinational operation already operating, and I feel that they could very easily open and do this and open a network, a zero emission network, and do it. They should have the money in their profits already, and they should be able to network. But the problem is, it's a bit sort of like, do they rob their current network to feed that network? And if that network is making profit, why do we change that bit? So yeah, we're at the start, we're at the forefront, and it's been very hard, and we're still not there yet. We're still cracking on. So we'll get there. Hopefully by the end of 2024, I want to be able to have a full 100% zero emission tailpipe throughout the UK.
Lee, you're clearly a very resilient human being, somebody who just, as you said, you're just going to get it done and you're going to keep going till you get it done. But that spirit has to come from somewhere. And I wonder what things in your life have tested you, because it's not all roses around the door for business people who are trying to break down barriers and change the way that we do stuff. Can you talk to us about a time when you've had to really dig deep and what lessons you've learned from that?
Yeah. During, I've had a couple of situations. I mean, the EV Cafe has been amazing for chatting about mental health. It's been massively important on the EV Cafe, and it's something that I really do resonate to. Being a graduate, when I was younger, now obviously doing the removals company, I had what I didn't realise at the time, but it was quite a big thing. But during that period, I spoke about the fact that I wasn't speaking to, well, we weren't speaking to my in-laws because we had a falling out, and I went and set up my own company. For about 2 or 3 years, I didn't speak to my in-laws. Me and my wife were fine, and she'd speak to them, but we wouldn't. And it was, you kind of go through it and you think it's okay. And it kind of built up to a point where actually it wasn't okay. And I ended up breaking down because of it. And that was a low point. Now that period, I didn't realize at that time about how or what happens to yourself to be able to get in that position. And I still didn't understand it correctly. I sort of like come away. I then started up a self storage company before, like after it. But in that time, I sort of, I was sitting in my house and just sort of like dishevelled. Didn't know what I was doing. Was so empty and didn't realise what I was doing. So I then stopped drinking for about 4 or 5 years, thinking it was the drink, and thinking, okay, I'm drunk too much. I've done this. I've done that. I shouldn't be doing this. So I stopped drinking. Not that I was a heavy drinker. I'd just go down the pub and after work, after removals, go down the pub, have a quick beer or whatever, and then go home. Not every day. Not just pointing it out. Not every day. But some people do that. It's a part of their life, you know.
Yeah, normal for some. Yeah.
So I stopped that for about 4 years and carried on. And I knew then, obviously, that I had an issue with my mental health, but I didn't know the depths of it. Then carrying on into COVID, I had a really big breakdown because during COVID, I ran this company on my own at that point. And during COVID, we had lockdown. We couldn't deliver what we were originally delivering in upholstery. Couldn't deliver that to certain people. Then we got bigger because we were doing doorstep deliveries for certain other retailers, and we grew and grew and grew. But at that point, I didn't have the structure in the business. I was naive. I didn't have anything. I was doing accounts. We had around about 100 people, and I was doing the accounts. I was doing the operation. I was running crews, everything, doing 20-hour days. And it really affected my personal life. It affected my professional life here. It affected massively, and I went rock bottom. So during COVID, I went rock bottom. I got signed off. I was on sertraline and tablets and you have like 50 milligrams. We were doing the hundreds, and then it was sort of like then we're going to therapy, probably took me about nearly two months for me to be able. At that time, I had to give the business, not give the business away, but I employed a general manager. There's another story to that later on. For 2 months, I was meant to be off. I was signed off. I was meant to be off for at least four to five months, maybe even 6 months. But I was only off in the end for 2 months, and that I nearly lost my marriage. I nearly lost everything, and at that point, you really feel like you're so insular. You're only thinking of yourself and your own you're so insular. It's unbelievable. Without therapy and without sort of everything that come through it and seeing someone and talking through it, then you don't really, you can't see anything out of it. You just literally, all you see is down. So then 2 months later, for a reason which we'll speak about off air, but I had to come back early for 2 months. So 2 months come down, I had to come back early. So I had to come back into the business and crack on. And at that point, so I've had to go back. At the same time, you kind of know that you kind of have it's like an addictive personality, but you have this thing in my head. I have so many ideas that pop up like literally left, right, and center, go like this way, and then then they have, then sort of all of a sudden you're just cracking on, you know, so you're full in it. And that's just me. So I know I can be right down at the bottom and I know I can be right at the top. And I know later on in life, if I don't keep myself sorted and I don't look after myself, Paul goes on his walks. I actually go on dog walks on every night. So I know for a fact of the walking and getting out there is important. But if you don't look after yourself, you're definitely going to go back down. So I know maybe one time in my life I'll get back down again. I'm not scared of that. I just that's a situation, and that's how I am.
I think my resilience. Yeah, what you're saying there just is the personification of resilience, isn't it? I think, you know, and you're in really good company in the sense that, you know, at 40 years old, I had, a catastrophe that did end a marriage and you know, ended up lots of counselling, lots of things to go through, real challenges. And I know I won't speak for John, but I know John has experienced stuff himself as well. It is the resilience comes from going into a dark place and then realizing that you can come out of it again and doing that almost multiple times. You know, so I can look at my life and I can think, right, when I went into care when I was 13. My mum left when I was 10. That happened. It was a catastrophe. 13, I went into care. That was a catastrophe. It got worse from there. But I still kept coming through. But, you know, in the early times, the first few times, you don't realize that actually you'll come out of this. And it's only as we get older and we learn that actually I'm going to go into this and it's not going to be nice. It's still going to be painful. It's not going to change how it feels, except it just keeps us off the bottom knowing that we're going to come out of it. Because we've got good people around us and we choose the right things around our mental health. And openness is key to that. Lee, thank you for sharing that. Because it's so valuable. So valuable for the people listening. And so valuable for you and for me. And that's why we get on, right? Because we've got that common ground. It's really brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, it is good. But the main factor this, obviously, talking about it and getting it out there is because if there's other people with regards to trying to do the raises or whatever and just get knockbacks and that, it's quite easy. Me and Jay could have quite easily just after sort of like we thought about 6-7 months, we could have said, no, we're not doing it. We've got some great business partners and that we've got here that have made sure that we carry on and we're doing it and getting it done. So it's only a matter of time before it gets done. And then when it gets done, I'll start going to the gym again.
but you guys are smashing it. You guys are smashing it. And so thinking with all that in mind, what would you tell your 15, 17-year-old self? What advice would you give it? Because, I mean, here you are, COO of one company, but also building out another company. What would you tell your younger self? What
advice? Age isn't a limit. You know, I've always been like that. Age is not a limit. It doesn't matter whether you're old. You always have to respect your elders without a shadow. But age isn't a limit.
Quite right.
You do. That's honestly, it's amazing. Some of the kids nowadays and the people we employ. But you don't. You always respect your elders. But then you shouldn't be scared of challenging them either at the same time. So for me, at that age, I probably wish I would have done things sooner and listened to my ideas sooner. So I have many ideas and I have many visions. And a lot of the times as I was younger, I had those visions, but I didn't have the confidence to be able to go ahead with them. So, and then a lot more years down the line, your ideas are being brought out and actually smashing it. I had that idea nearly 2 years ago. Why didn't I action that? You know, so yeah. I think at the age now, I think you've got the opportunity to be able with the internet. We didn't have that when we were younger, obviously, but the internet was just coming out when I was leaving school. So. But I think they've got the opportunity to be able to do things and do things earlier and sooner, and therefore for my idea would have a better quality of life later on. Hopefully that would be the plan, because they would have done their idea, they would have seen it to fruition early, they would have been able to have their lovely younger life, and then maybe later on with a bit of money and that in the bank, they'll be able to then have their family and have a settled life, you know, because having a raise or running a business when you've got young family is very, very hard. You don't get to see your children that much. You don't get to see your wife that much. And things take priority over getting food on the table rather than family time.
So let's think about the future, Lee. And when people look back on your life and they say, Lee Sibley, you know, 100 years time, Lee Sibley. He was a good geezer. He was a nice bloke. He was a hard-working fellow. What will they say about you? How will they remember this person?
I think a lot of them. Can we swear on there or not? Or are
go,
we allowed to swear?
Go for it.
I think some of them will say he was an absolute arsehole. Some of them will say that yeah, he was lovely. And there'll be a very few that will say that he was the most protective person and that of a friend that I could ever have. I've only got a certain amount of friends. And they would know that I'll go to hell and back for them. I like to keep my circle close because you have to be very careful in life of who you give information to.
Yeah.
Otherwise totally. It gets put back at you. So for me personally, a lot of people will say, yeah, he's an absolute arsehole. he's a good laugh. I'm a good team player. I could go, like, honestly, if we were going to do anything and do anything, we'd have a crack and all that. But I would just, I'm quite open. I wear my heart on my sleeve. But also at the same time, you would only get my full attention if you were honest to me and care for me. So I think, to be honest with you, I would hope it was be a good guy. I think a lot of people hopefully would say that. It's really weird. It's a weird thing to think about, and I'm really not there. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to be passing away. I'm not ready to be living out. Honestly, it's not something. How weird is that? Probably not something I thought about, to be fair. But yeah, I keep my circle close, so I like it like that.
Mate, that's an awesome response. And do you know what? This has been just so enlightening. What's the future for Green 2? How do you see that future happening? And a call out to people just as we close off.
Yeah. So Green 2 basically will be the go-to delivery company for retailers and anyone, any businesses that wants to be able to transport their goods from one place to another without causing any harm to the environment. I mean, obviously, we do have the fact that the electricity and the building of the products does cause emissions, but the actual action, the actual delivery, zero tailpipe deliveries, we can do that without harming the environment. And the more people do that, and the more that gets said, and if we can help advance that situation or speed up the adoption via our network, via our fleets, that would be amazing. That's the goal for us, to about help speed up the adoption and to help be up there with, if anyone wants a question or something answered on it, then we're the ones to go to.
Mate, listen, that is a beautiful summary. And looking at, you know, why we get on and why we kind of have an affinity, that the vision of the EV Cafe is to accelerate the transition to zero emission transport, right? And there you are, you are accelerating yourselves that zero emission journey, but also you're providing and facilitating for others with this kind of innovative behind the wire kind of charging network that you're planning out that will allow for other logistics companies and other people to be able to access that charging network that you've built for yourself, but enable them to carry on their journey. I mean, that to me is innovation at its best. And I know that John and I both wish you and the EV Cafe and all this whole community, actually, you know, we know that you're doing the rally this year, the EV rally, the Green Fleet EV rally, which is going to be brilliant. It was brilliant last year where we got to know each other a little bit. And, you know, we know the caliber of man that you are, just from talking to you today, but also from the time that we've spent with you outside of this conversation. Lee Sibley from Green Tea Delivery, we really wish you all of the very, very best. And you know that you have the backing of the community, and whatever we can do to support that vision that you've just outlined there, you've got us, because you're a good guy. And I think that's what people will be looking back. Less arsehole, more good guy, I think.
I hope so. And to be honest with you, I've got to check the lottery ticket as well, because I don't know if anyone is going to be able to speed it up and pay everyone and get sorted for the next year, 2 years. But I really appreciate that, Paul. And it's and
pleasure.
And thank you. Been massive support. So thank you very much. Cheers, John.
And so I would encourage people to follow the Green Tea Delivery LinkedIn page. Check out the website. Is there any other social media that you're on where we can check you out?
Our business is obviously a lot of B2B, so it is LinkedIn, and obviously we have our website with our tracking link and that for deliveries and everything like that. So it's fine, and obviously myself and Jay are on LinkedIn as well. So
hook up with the guys. Yeah. Brilliant. So, Lee Sibley, thanks so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your heart, for your vision, for your foundations. It's been a real blessing and a real help to many of us, I'm sure. And if you want to get more from the EV Cafe, the EV Cafe podcast, the takeaway, do check out our webpage, of course, on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us there. But evcafe.org for all the links that you will need. Until next time, everybody. John, thank you so much. Lee, thank you. You've been an incredible guest today. And everybody, thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.